Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. There's something I feel like I have to address, and that is that there's a segment of people who watch my videos who, in the comment section, I've noticed, have their own preconceived notions which make them think that whenever I'm talking about the owners and controllers of global financialized capital, I'm talking about the Jews. So, no. And I really think that you're going to have to rehabilitate your thinking out of these kinds of assumptions. Especially Muslims. Now, I'm not going to go into the whole history of the Jewish people here, nor am I going to enter into the controversy about what actually constitutes a Jew, whether it's an ethnic identity or a religious identity or both. But suffice it to say, that is not at all a clear issue. Personally, I agree with Shlomo Sand on this, in that it does my head in to think that someone can be an atheist and also Jewish. How you can not believe in or practice Judaism but still be regarded as a Jew doesn't make any sense to me. Particularly since everyone who claims to be ethnically Jewish is actually a very complex genetic mix. But we'll leave that aside. We'll just have to go with the ill-defined blanket term, Jew, for the purposes of this discussion. So are the Jews all rich and do they own everything? Well, let me first break down global ownership of wealth. 55% of global wealth is owned by Christians. 35% of global wealth is owned by non-religious people, people of no religion. 6% of global wealth is owned by Muslims. 3% is owned by Hindus. And 1% of global wealth is owned by Jews. So here, of course, you're going to actually run into that issue of what a Jew really is, because obviously within that 35% of non-religious people who own wealth, there's going to be some atheistic, non-religious Jews there who consider themselves Jews but are not religiously affiliated with Judaism in any way. But be that as it may, Christians own significantly more wealth than Jews globally. Okay, now, according to Forbes magazine, there are 267 Jewish billionaires. Again, that includes both religious and non-religious Jews. And that's out of a total number of billionaires in the world of 2,668. So roughly 10% are Jewish, and 90% of billionaires are not Jewish. Around 2% of the millionaires in the world are Jewish, but around 7% of the millionaires in the world are Muslim. So the Jews aren't really surpassing anyone in that regard. The ratio of Jews with higher incomes in the United States specifically is higher than the ratio of higher income people relative to the general population. 24% of religious Jews and 21% of non-religious Jews have annual incomes higher than $200,000 a year. But around 47% of all American Jews earn $50,000 or less per year, which puts them more or less squarely in the middle class. And it's around the same percentage as the general population, around 50%, around half of the American population is middle class. So there's nothing particularly stunning there either. But, you know, a more interesting thing to look at is actually the global ownership of investment capital by religious groups. The University of Oxford actually did a study of 360 faith-based investment organizations, and they found that Christian-aligned capital totaled around $260 billion. Hindu and Buddhist-aligned capital actually totaled around $300 billion, while Jewish-aligned capital was only around $16 billion. But when they looked at Muslim sovereign capital and private finance capital, that totaled a whopping $4 trillion. So $16 billion is considerably less than $4 trillion. But okay, so I know that when the Jews are the richest and they own everything assumption gets disproven, the standby argument as the go-to is, okay, it's not just about the wealth, it's about how they use it and which sectors of the economy they are strategically using their wealth in and where they place themselves to give them disproportionate control. I mean, the Jews own all the banks, right? And big tech and the media. Okay, let's see. Let's start with the banks. First of all, of the top 10 biggest banks in the world, half of them are in China, so that's a non-starter. The biggest American bank is JP Morgan Chase, which is predominantly owned by institutional investors like BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street. Of the top five individual investors in JP Morgan Chase, two of them are Jewish. The next largest Western bank is BNP Paribas in France, which is 92% owned by institutional investors, and the CEO was accused of anti-Semitism and of forcing employees to view Hitler in a positive light in a training video that was circulated internally to the bank. So much for the Jewish influence on that particular bank. And then the next bank we have is Bank of America, which is again predominantly owned by institutional investors, led by Berkshire Hathaway, which is Warren Buffett, who is not a Jew. And Warren Buffett is also the largest private individual shareholder in Wells Fargo, with the rest being institutional investors. And the same pretty much goes for Citigroup as well. And you can sort of see the pattern. Look, the idea of Jews controlling banking is basically born out of the old history of Jews in Europe, when the Christian church was the dominant political power and they prohibited Christians from engaging in riba, in interest. But they didn't prohibit Jews from doing so. So Jews became moneylenders, became financiers, and founded banks. But this history is very old, and it's obsolete, and it has been for a long time. But also, private individual ownership of banks and companies is virtually obsolete as well, which is why the whole notion of exclusive Jewish control or even disproportionate control over anything is just not feasible today. All of these institutions have literally layers upon layers upon layers of owners. The institutional investors, the institutional shareholders, are largely asset management companies like BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street, who themselves are beholden to their shareholders and their investors. So what it actually comes down to is just rich people. And again, most rich people are not Jewish. Okay, so now let's look at big tech. The big five, that's Alphabet, Amazon, Apple, Meta, and Microsoft. Okay, so Alphabet, again, the majority shareholders are institutional investors. But the two largest individual shareholders are the two founders of Google, who are both Jewish. The largest individual shareholders of Amazon are Jeff Bezos, who is not Jewish, and Andy Jassy, who is Jewish. And Amazon is the same thing. Institutional investors are the majority shareholders, but you have the individual investors, the largest of which is Jeff Bezos, who is not Jewish, and Andy Jassy, who is Jewish. Apple is owned by institutional investors, led by Vanguard and Berkshire Hathaway, again, which is Warren Buffett, who is not a Jew. And the biggest individual shareholder is Tim Cook, who is also not Jewish. The controlling shareholder of Meta is, of course, Mark Zuckerberg, who is Jewish, but the company is 74% owned by institutional investors. As for Microsoft, of course, Bill Gates is not Jewish, nor are the top three individual shareholders of Microsoft. And yet again, the company is mostly owned by institutional investors. So basically, you just have Google and Meta, where there are Jewish people with powerful shareholding control. But that control is always mitigated by the fact that these are public companies which are accountable to an ocean of institutional investors. So what about media? The largest media conglomerates in America are AT&T, Comcast, Disney, News Corp, Fox, and Sony. Between them, they own most of the television networks, film studios, publishers, newspapers, TV channels, and so on. In addition to these conglomerates, there are a little over a dozen individual billionaires with significant media holdings. Most of these media conglomerates are public companies, and they are majority owned by institutional investors. So bear that in mind. When it's owned by institutional investors, it means that it is owned by an ocean of nameless, faceless, rich people, most of whom are not Jewish. So you have institutional investors, and then you have the individual investors. In all of these companies, the overwhelming majority of ownership is with institutions. There's a small slice of these companies where there are individual investors. So the largest individual investor for, say, Comcast, he is a Jew. The largest individual shareholder of AT&T is not Jewish. Of the top three individual shareholders of Disney, two are Jewish. The top individual shareholders of News Corp are not Jewish. The major individual shareholders of Fox are the Murdoch family, who are not Jewish and even have been accused of anti-Semitism. And Sony, of course, is also not Jewish owned. And then out of the 14 or 15 billionaires with significant media holdings, which means local and national newspapers, radio stations, television channels, and so on, out of that 14 or 15 people, five of them are Jews. So banking, big tech, and media, there is not actually significant Jewish ownership. Now, if you wanted to dig deeper, because you're not satisfied with that, and say, It's not about the ownership, it's about the executives, it's about the CEOs, it's about the management, because they can control what the company does, then you don't understand how corporations work. Even if you discovered that there was an overrepresentation of Jews in positions of CEO or executive positions or management positions, it wouldn't matter. In the corporate model, CEOs and management are completely subordinate to shareholders. It means they cannot use their positions to pursue some ideological agenda. They must use their positions strictly and exclusively to pursue the benefit of shareholders. And if they don't, they will lose their jobs. Okay, so we've gone through banking, we've gone through media, we've gone through big tech. What's left? Well, political power, right? The Jews control political policy, right? Okay, let's look at it. What is referred to as the pro-Israel lobby or the Jewish lobby is actually an assortment or a collection of pro-Jewish, pro-Israeli lobbies and political action committees like, say, J Street or IPAC, names that you might know, as well as a few lesser-known organizations. So in the latest numbers that we have, which are from 2021 to 2022, the combined Jewish lobbies contributed a total of $30 million to politicians in Washington. That sounds like a lot, right? Well, Saudi Arabia and the UAE in that same amount of time spent $100 million. Look, Muslims have to understand, U.S. support for Israel has nothing to do with the Jewish lobby. They have historically supported Israel because it is beneficial for them to do so. And in terms of lobbying, no one benefits more from U.S. policy towards Israel than the defense industry. And the defense industry consistently outspends the Jewish lobby in every election cycle by tens of millions of dollars. But it's in everyone's interest to pretend that the Jewish lobby is that powerful. For the Jewish lobbyists themselves, obviously, they can pretend that they are highly effective and sell their services to their Jewish communities so that they can garner more support and more donations, more contributions to make them richer, based on the idea that they're just incredibly influential. And for everyone else, it allows them to deflect responsibility for policies by blaming the all-powerful Jewish lobby. So to conclude, Jews are among the owners and controllers of global financialized capital, primarily or predominantly as the controllers, which, despite what the name might suggest, is a subordinate position to the owners of capital. But the Jews are by no means the dominant players in this class. Furthermore, I would like to say that Jews are not monolithic in their ideology, certainly not extremely wealthy Jews. You know, in the ayah, when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says about the Jews, you think that they're united, but their hearts are divided. That ayah isn't about the Jews. That ayah is about us. Because Allah isn't pointing out some unique thing about the division between the hearts of the Jews. Division is a very normal de facto state between human beings. What is unique that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is drawing our attention to is our belief that they are united. He is pointing out to us the error of our assumption. And yet many of us continue to hold that assumption. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said that they won't fight you unless they are behind a wall or in a high fortress, and that unless they are under a covenant with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala or a treaty with people more powerful than them, they will be in a weakened and subject state. And this, of course, is true, and history bears it out. It's the classic position of any people who generally operate as middleman minorities. They are reliant upon others for their security, financial and otherwise. So you take someone like Larry Fink, who's the head of BlackRock and who is a Jew. He's a middleman. His position depends upon the approval of those who own the assets that he manages on their behalf. This is how such a tiny group of people were able to survive more or less cohesively for thousands of years. The Jews highly value education and on average spend more years in school than most people. And unsurprisingly, they reap the benefits of that in their professional careers and their incomes. But no, the Jews are not the owners and controllers of global financialized capital. That's absurd. And that's all based on old conspiracy theories of European and Christian anti-Semites. But the Jews are, as Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala described them, not as the Nazis described them. Jazakum Allahu khairan wa assalamu alaikum.